We've all seen those great pictures, those family photos where everybody wears something really stupid and has a dumb laugh, and later on you're going to laugh at the haircuts. But wouldn't it be interesting if you took a look at that family photo and realized, who's that face in the back? Is that an Uncle Ted? Hasn't Uncle Ted been dead for 20 years? Welcome, everyone, to the Weird World Podcast. I'm Dean.
I'm Carrie.
And Carrie's going to talk to us about spirit photography, a little tease. Maybe it was a little mysterious there. I'm not sure if it was clear about that, what the episode is about. But today's episode is about a practice that was shockingly common. I don't know if common, but not unheard of throughout most of the 19th century, oddly enough, well into the 20th century, that there were photographers out there who said they could take a picture of your dead loved one. Mm-hmm. They were in touch with the spirit world. And they can, you know, get them to smile for the camera.
Well, you're right. We're going to talk about the father of this practice. But actually from like as soon pretty much as photography started in the early 1800s, people were trying to figure out or wondering, can we capture supernatural things
really
with photographs? Like, and a lot of it was hoaxy, like the Fox sisters.
Yeah.
Doing little fairies and
the Fox sisters of fairies.
No, not the Fox sisters. Okay. The little
that was the Cottonley fairies in the early 1900s. So that's a long time
after. Yeah. Okay. And then the Fox sisters started the whole. Well, they didn't start.
Well, they did spirit wrapping. Yeah. They didn't do photography.
No, they didn't. But it was part of the whole spiritualism.
Yeah, for sure.
Phenomena.
We do forget. I know we've talked about spiritualism here on the show a few times, but it was huge. It had millions upon millions of adherents in the United States and Europe. It was a major, I think I've mentioned this on a show once or twice, but there were some Christian theologians and religious folks who were actually nervous that it could unseat Christianity. I mean, most of it was, most spiritualists who were Christians kept that Christian faith. But there was an element of it being kind of threatening to become a religion, a belief system.
Really?
Yeah. And they were, and some folks from the pulpit were kind of nervous about it and railed against it.
While
others embraced it and said, oh, no, you know, there's an afterworld or whatever, these, you know, the soul, that kind of thing. So it was a big, big deal for quite a while in the 19th. Started dying out, and then it had a recurrence after World War One because everybody had somebody they knew and loved that was dead.
Yeah.
And then kind of fizzled in, I think, the 30s.
Well, before we start talking about spirit photography, we're going to talk about a French guy named Louis Darget. He thought he could figure out a way to photograph thoughts.
Oh.
And his work actually sort of led to the invention of X-rays, but he was thinking, stumbled onto this scientific process. And what he would do was strap a photographic plate to a person's head and then somehow expose it, whatever, like in regular photography. Yeah. And then he would get an actual photo, and then it would have some sort of image on it that he believed was a representation of the person's thoughts. But then he would have to interpret the image into what he thought their thought was. So he actually had his wife do it. So he had her hold this plate in front of her forehead so he could photograph her thoughts. And she fully admits she fell asleep. She dozed off because it takes a while to, you know, expose the photo plate or whatever. But he still interpreted her thought as an eagle. She, again, fully admits she did not either think or dream about an eagle, but
as far as she knows.
Yeah. I'm sure his explanation would be she dreamt it, and she doesn't remember.
But is he seeing something on the photograph?
Yes.
On the plate?
Yes. And again, it's some like an eagle to him. Sort. Yes. He's interpreting, in quotes, this as an eagle. And so it turns out what he's actually capturing on the photo is a result of the person's body heat. It's heat related, obviously, not thought related.
Well, no, thoughtography is a thing. It's still around.
Yeah.
I've had doing an episode on Ted Serios for years.
Really?
Because he's the most famous thoughtographer from the 60s and 70s, I think.
Well, this is in the 1800s.
I know, yeah, so it goes way, way yeah. back.
Well, so the French Academy of Arts and Sciences wanted to do an experiment to test this because they thought there's no way this is a real thing because yeah. they're very scientific. And so they got a corpse. And we're going to see, you know, if we can photograph the thoughts of a corpse. Obviously, no, nothing happened.
Heat related, yeah.
And I don't think that they knew that it was going to be heat related, but they must have suspected because then they warmed up the corpse. I'm not sure how they warmed up the corpse.
Don't want to know.
But they did. And then they were able to get an image. So they thought they were uncovering Darget as a fraud. He still believed he was doing something very scientific. He was convinced that what he was doing was real and scientific. So he wasn't a fraudster.
Yeah. Just
he was just
he's wrong.
And so he wasn't tricking anybody. I don't think he was charging people for these or anything like that. Some of his photos are at the Getty Museum now, so you can see these. People were genuinely trying to do scientific things, but people were also trying to do not so scientific things. We're going to talk about a man named William H. Mumler.
William H. Mumler.
He was born in 1822. He was, at the time when he started his career, he was not a photographer or a medium or anything like that. He actually was an engraver, and he worked at like a silver business where they engraved all kinds of things like watches, jewelry, you know.
That's a fairly
flatware
for the time. That's kind of almost photography adjacent because it needed silver, and it's just, when was the first photograph? Do you know?
I think in the 1830s, but
yeah, I think so. That feels right to
me. I don't know exactly
Go
when.
Ahead, I'll look it up.
Well, this business, he was in Boston, and the business was called Bigelow Brothers and Kennard, and he was pretty well respected. I mean, he, you know, was a good engraver. He became interested in photography himself in the early 1860s, and there was a photography studio nearby run by Mrs. H.F. Stewart, because, of course, she doesn't have a first name of her own.
Nope.
And he would go there to learn about photography. I guess she just taught him, I don't know, or somebody there taught him how to do it. So one day he was just fooling around taking a self-portrait. This is in 1861. And he takes this self-portrait of himself. And when he develops it, he notices there's a figure of a girl in the picture with him. And it's like, oh my gosh, that kind of looks like my cousin, he thought, who had died 12 years earlier.
Wow.
And he thought it was weird and interesting. He started showing it around to all of his friends. Like, look at this weird photo I took. Look at this girl here.
What year is this?
1861.
Okay.
And there's two stories about this.
Can I tell you real quick what the first photograph was?
Yeah.
It was 1826 or 1827 by a French guy named Joseph Niesfor Niepce. And he used a camera obscura, which is like a little pinhole kind of a thing, and a bitumen-coated pewter plate. Had to expose the plate for several hours, and the image was created by heliography, a process that uses the hardening of bitumen, I think
whatever
that's
that
right,
is.
In light. It's a metal or mineral or something. And it was just a picture out of his window of, like, you know, a building next to him. So it goes, but still in 1839, it's still an embassy. But by where we are now in 1860s, it was, you know, it was still difficult. We still had glass plates, things like that, but it was common.
Yeah. So there's two stories that.
Okay.
So we don't know which one is completely accurate. One says he identified this as my dead cousin and, you know, I have a photo of her spirit. Another one was. And, you know, showing his friends and talking about it like that. Another one was, you know, haha, look at this mistake I made. Oops, I goofed kind of thing.
Oh.
So in one, he genuinely thought it was a spirit. Yeah. In another, he knew.
That
he did something wrong in the
probably
process.
Probably took a plate, over a plate that's already exposed.
Possibly.
I know, hopefully you learned this in your research, but double exposure, it was the way that was mostly done.
Yeah.
Does it literally just mean you took a picture on the same plate and then you took another picture with that same photographic plate? Is that more or less what that means?
You reuse the same plate that you already exposed a photo on, or they could do it in the processing part of it, basically overlap a glass plate on another plate. So you basically
while it's developing, it took a long time to develop. Okay.
I still don't fully understand how photography works.
It's a mystery. Photographers,
I'm sure they know
it's magic.
They know how it works.
This is my magic box.
It's very weird to me that it's a glass plate. I mean,
back then, yeah.
Yeah, it is very weird. And did they already have like daguerreotypes and stuff like that? Isn't that the silk on metal? Weren't those?
I think so.
Yes. Yeah, yes. Those were earlier, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. So anyway,
sure.
So he got this picture with his dead cousin, and so he was showing this photo with his dead cousin all around Boston, apparently, his friends, and everybody was interested in it. And two spiritualist periodicals at the time, which, of course, there were spiritualist periodicals.
Yeah.
But at least one of these was in Boston. I don't know where the other one was. But they wrote articles about his photo because, of course, spiritualists would be very interested in this. One of them was called the Herald of Progress and the other, the Banner of Light.
Okay. Because they didn't have pretentious names for their magazines at all.
And he later said he was kind of mortified at all the attention he was getting. But amazingly enough, spirits kept appearing in the photos that he started taking.
Because he's suddenly getting a lot of attention and a lot of new business, I imagine.
The spiritualists of Boston were super excited about his photo because they thought it was scientific proof that what they believed in was true. That
afterlife,
there really
ghost.
Were, and there were spirits around
and
us.
Boston was a huge, and I know Mumbler just happened to be, it sounds like Mumbler stumbled Mumbler stumbled into being this spirit photographer. But being in Boston was a stroke of luck because that was, I'm pretty sure the center of spiritualism in America.
Was it?
At the time, I think. Certainly one of the primary places.
Well, spiritualism was huge in Boston and probably in other places. And people were trying all sorts of ways to try to communicate with their dead loved ones. Obviously, this was during the Civil War.
Yeah.
A lot of people were losing their loved ones. And, you know, maybe they hadn't gotten a photo of them before they died. And so they thought, this is great. Now we can try to get a picture.
Well, see, that'd be interesting. If there wasn't an existing photo of this loved one, how is he doing double trick photography, quote unquote?
Well, we'll talk about that a little bit. So Mumbler at this time decides to give up on engraving and become a full-time photographer.
Yeah.
So he started charging like $10 for a portrait.
$7 billion.
It's funny because one thing I read said $10, and this was a very trusted source, said he was charging $10. A normal portrait would cost about 25 cents.
Wow.
And then another thing I read said he was charging up to $100, which would be like thousands of dollars, right?
No,
I mean,
oh my God.
That would be crazy.
No, $10 might be thousands of dollars nowadays. 1860?
And that, and that $100 was like three times what a normal portrait would be. There's no way people
you know
were
I'm not
paying
good with that. It's
$30.
All $7 billion to me. Yeah. But it's that would be, $10 would be a lot of money.
$100 would be a ton of money.
Yes. There's no way. 25 cents seems like it's too cheap.
I know.
So if it was three times, it might have cost $3 or $4.
Maybe.
And he was charging 10. That makes sense.
Either way, he was charging an awful lot for a spirit photograph. And people were very willing to pay it, but he also didn't make any guarantees. So there was no guarantee you were going to get your spirit in your photo and you still had to pay the same amount. And he said it's because he can't force a spirit to appear. They show up when they want to. So the customer would come in and they would, you know, it took a long time to expose the plate or whatever. So they would have to sit completely still for like a full minute, which doesn't seem like very long, but try to sit still for
that's
a full minute.
I know. That's why you have so many eyes closed. You can't not blink.
Yeah.
So.
And then it was just like, hopefully their dead loved one would appear.
Yeah.
Usually standing next to them or kind of behind them or sometimes even like hovering above or whatever. Sometimes like their hand on their shoulder or sometimes we'll see, we can post a lot of
that
pictures.
Would be absolutely freaky though to see a picture, especially in 1860s. You don't know what's going on. And there's you, your wife, your children, mm-hmm. and your dead child is, yeah. you know, standing there with you.
Yeah.
As if, especially if you don't, if you didn't have an existing picture of yep. them, how is that happening?
Yeah. Well, so, okay. And you wanted to know how would he know, yeah. you know, how to get.
No, how would he be able to do that without a
exactly.
picture?
Well, here's the thing.
Would he draw something?
Like you said, a lot of times people didn't have photographs yeah. of their loved ones. And so, especially if somebody had been dead for a while, mm-hmm. your memory plays tricks on you. I don't know if he asked questions like who yeah. is this person or whatever. But
tell
also,
me about Uncle Charles.
Also,
he was about
the
so high.
Spirits in the photographs are not super clear.
Okay.
So they're kind of translucent. They're kind of fuzzy and blurry. So you see what you want to see.
Do you think he just took stock pictures?
Yes.
So in other words, he had pictures of a middle-aged man, if mm-hmm. it was something like that, or a child,
probably.
Or a little girl, a little boy.
Yes.
And he just yeah. used those. Okay.
Yeah. And especially if you're grief-stricken,
yeah.
like say your child died or whatever, and you never got a picture of them. And
eventually he just got really cocky and put a black child in there for a white family. It's like, oh, it does look like Susie, I guess. $360.
Well, we'll talk about what starts to happen. But he also, what?
$360. Is the amount is $10 in 1961.
Oh,
people with $360 now, Carrie. I want to acknowledge that because my $7 billion estimate was a little bit exaggerated. I admit that. $360 doesn't seem like enough, though.
For one picture?
I guess so. But it wasn't. So if it's $3 or $4, it was still a lot of money. It'd be over $100 if it's
yeah.
three. So that, but that tells you, though, you know, photography was common, but it was still something you had to go to somebody.
Yes.
Not that many people do it. It wasn't
yeah.
cheap.
Well, I mean, think about it like, when we were young and, you yeah. know, wanting to get a nice portrait.
How much did that
for
cost?
Something, it was pretty expensive.
Like $50 or something like that?
Oh, more than that. Like
okay, so that's worth $7 billion
nowadays. If you're going to a professional photographer mm-hmm. for, you know, sitting for like a formal family portrait or whatever, mm-hmm. it would be in the hundreds. Like,
really?
Yeah. Oh,
so
yeah.
again,
yeah.
in today's dollars,
yeah,
$7
billion. Yeah.
It's expensive. Okay.
So anyway.
Now.
We now, yeah,
need that.
We don't need photographers at all. So
wow.
Argue.
Wow.
I don't agree with
it's
that.
Brutal.
But it's much easier for a non-professional photographer
sure.
to take some really good photos. Anyway, in addition to having people come to the studio and sit for these spirit photographs, he also had a little mail order business. Mm. You got a little discount because you're not going to be in the picture. He charged $7.50. And a person would mail him a description okay. of their loved one, their deceased loved one that they wanted a spirit photograph of. And then he would try to summon them into the studio, get a photograph of them that he would then mail back to
yeah.
the customer.
So he just, again, it sounds like he really did stumble onto this with that accident
yeah.
that he probably laughed off. But then someone said, is that your cousin? He said, yeah, of course. And then he just, he yeah. went with it. He leans into it big time. He's now doing this
yes.
as his occupation entirely.
This,
and
yep.
he's going one step further and just absolutely, obviously scamming people. With no, I mean, I assume
mm-hmm.
that he wasn't in touch with these people. I mean, clearly he's just doing pictures. He gets a description. He gets someone to pose or has an old,
yeah.
he's done tons of regular
yeah.
pictures and he just says, this is your loved one.
He figured that out with the mail order
yeah,
business.
Did,
they
yeah.
have to describe what their yeah. person looks like, right?
So
he knows he's got the right spirit.
That makes you, it almost seems more likely, I don't know if you read it or not, but it does seem like that he probably did ask them when they were posing, when they did come into the studio to pose, he was asking them about the
oh, I'm sure he did.
Their loved one,
yeah.
for sure.
Because that would be part of the conversation,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Who
How
are
old
you?
Was she
yeah.
or yes. he or whatever? Okay.
Yeah. Well, he also had the added benefit of a built-in medium
uh-huh.
because Mrs. Stewart, remember, she was the one who originally, or she owned the photography studio.
Mm-hmm.
Her receptionist, Hannah, was a medium. She was a freelance medium
freelance
when she
medium.
Wasn't a photography receptionist. Mm-hmm. And she was pretty well known and kind of respected in the Boston spiritualist community. And her husband was off fighting in the Civil War. And then he died.
Oh.
And when she received word about his death, she and Mumler got married.
Well, isn't that interesting?
Mm-hmm. which was perfect for his spirit photography business. So while the customer was sitting for their portrait, Hannah would basically be the conduit for all the spirits. Okay. And, you know, she, you know, would get them to appear.
So Hannah was the one who would get in touch with the spirits.
Okay. Mm-hmm. But then Mumler also started referring to himself as a medium. So he would, you know, act like he was a medium too.
He's thinking, what if we get divorced? that's going to be a problem. I better cover my base there. Mm-hmm. I can do it as well.
Well, business was booming. Mm-hmm. They were making a lot of money and he would get visitors from all over the place. Other photographers, just plain old photographers, were suspicious of his business, and some of them even wanted to prove that he was a fraud.
Did they do sting operations?
Yes, they did. Nice. Because obviously, I guess maybe the photography community wasn't that large, and so they kind of knew each other. And so they would hire investigators to go in and pose as customers or whatever. So there's this one photographer, his name was James Wallace Black, and this is 1862. So it's not that long after Mumler started his business. This Black, he actually took the first aerial photograph in the United States from a hot air balloon of Boston. His studio was like two blocks away from Mumler's. And one day, one of Mumler's customers brought a spirit photo that he had gotten from Mumler's to Black's studio and said, "Hey, can you do one of these?" And I don't know, maybe he was trying to get a cheaper deal or something. And, you know, James Black looked at it and thought, "No, I've never done this before. I can't do this." And
meaning, but did the guy say, "This is my dead cousin?"
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because Black undoubtedly knew what double photography.
No,
was.
He didn't know.
Oh, he did not?
No,
really?
He
was still
know.
So early in the...
Yep. And he was curious, like, how did this guy, Mumler, do this? Get this picture? He didn't know.
Oh.
He thought it was probably a scam, but he couldn't figure out just by looking at it how he accomplished it.
Oh.
So he sent someone over to Mumler's studio to pose as a customer, somebody who knew a lot about photography too, see if they could kind of watch Mumler's process and figure out how he was doing it. So this guy, I didn't write down his name. I think it was Weston or something like that. He gets his photograph done. He gets his portrait and lo and behold, his dead father is in the picture. Well, he knew a lot about photography. He couldn't figure out how Mumler did this and how Mumler got his dead father into his picture, but he was convinced. He didn't think it was a hoax.
Huh.
He thought Mumler really got a picture of his dead father.
Wow.
So he took it back to Black's studio and showed him. And the people in Black's studio were like, "You're ridiculous. We don't know how he did it, but this isn't real."
That's interesting because Google says that it was invented in the mid-1800s and its first major use was for spirit photography. It was exposure. Exposure was invented shortly before Mumler. And I don't know. I don't know if people were teaching it to one another. He didn't invent it.
No.
But it was very early on, 1861, when it had been invented. And quickly used for this spirit photography kind of thing.
Yeah, because they acted like they couldn't figure it out.
Yeah. So it sounds like not all photographers knew about
it. No, they must not have. Well, so the guy who I think his name is Weston, the guy who was convinced.
Another thing says that Mumler basically invented it. I take that back. It says it traces back to the 1860s when William H. Mumler pioneered what he referred to as spirit photography. It's basically double exposure.
Okay.
He may have accidentally, I'm sure, invented it.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. I don't know. I don't want to, because this is AI, so who
knows? Yeah.
but it sounds like he more or less may have invented it. Yeah.
Well, so this investigator, he believed it was authentic and he was a little bit put off that the people at Black's photography studio were laughing at him and ridiculing him. So he goes back to Mumler and he says, "Hey, Black sent me here to prove that you were committing fraud. Can he come? Can Black, I believe that you really got my dead father. Mm-hmm. Can Black come to your studio and watch your process and, See, he said he'll pay you. He'll pay you $50 to come if he can truly watch everything you do in your process. And Mumler said, yeah, bring him over.
Interesting.
So Black was a little bit cocky, and because Mumler said, you can process my photo yourself if you want to. And
well, that leads me to believe how he's doing it is not the process. He's putting an already exposed plate because
probably
have seen that.
But so, like I said, Black was so convinced that Mumler was stupid and that he was smarter. He flat out told him, you're not smart enough to manipulate the photos without me being able to watch you and figure it out. So no, I don't need to. I'll just watch you and
that's the
expose you.
Worst kind of person to test someone because they're not going to. It's going to be something so much simpler than they're looking for that they're not going to see it.
Yeah. So he sat for his photo and he followed Mumler around as he did everything. He didn't do it himself, but he watched him. And then sure enough, when his photo was processed, there was a spirit in it. Hmm. And Black was convinced. He thought this guy is too stupid to fake it, so it must be real.
So he was sold.
He offered Mumler the $50 that he said, and Mumler wouldn't take it. I guess he didn't need that extra $50.
He's rolling cash.
And then Black was a respected photographer. He went all around Boston telling everybody this guy can do spirit photography. So it was better for Mumler in the end. So what started happening was some people were starting to recognize some of the spirits in Mumler's
crisis actors.
And so I think this is kind of like a function of him getting pretty popular and a lot of people doing this.
And doing a lot of, and doing a lot of them. Yep. Eventually someone's going to recognize that person from, wait, no, that's me. You took my picture 6 years ago in a normal family photograph and now you're reusing me as a spirit?
Well, nobody saw themselves, but they,
saw someone.
They saw people they knew, or they saw like, hey, that person supposedly died 40 years ago. Why are they wearing the latest fashions kind of thing? So they were wearing contemporary clothing. It didn't make sense.
I didn't think about that. That's true. They're wearing bell bottoms in the 1860s. Yeah. That's not right. They're from the future in that case.
Well, Dr. H.F. Gardner was a spiritualist, and he had sat for a portrait with Mumler before, and he wanted to have a second one done. And so he went in and he got it done, and lo and behold, he recognized the supposed spirit in his photo as somebody he knew who was still alive. He then kind of turned on Mumler. I mean, he still was a spiritualist and he believed in all of this kind of stuff, but he thought this guy is committing fraud against us true believers kind of thing.
Person. Mm-hmm. I wonder if they went so far as to trace and say, no, and in fact, you took a picture of that guy. Right,
no.
My friend Clem, you took a picture of in 6 years. I asked Clem, and he said, "Yeah, I posed for him." I guess he could have been getting pictures from who knows where, from other photographers, just as you know, just to double expose them, so he has as many models, quote unquote, as many spirits as possible.
Who knows? The stories don't say anything about how exactly he was doing it, but I'm sure a lot of it was people that he had already photographed.
For sure, that would be the main thing. Did anybody do a sting where they simply go in there and say, "Yeah, it's my dead Aunt Harriet"? Blah, 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 blah. And you, of course, don't have a dead Aunt Harriet, and he comes up with a dead Aunt Harriet, you know he's lying.
No, I don't think so.
That would be the easiest way to do it.
Well, this Gardner wanted to expose him as a fraud, so he promptly writes a letter to the Banner of Light and explains to them.
And you said he was a spiritualist?
Yes.
Interesting.
So he still believed his first photo was correct. So, but somehow the second photo...
We call that the Uri Geller defense. When he bends a lot of spoons, when he's caught cheating and pre-bending the spoon, he says, well, I just got so tired of it. I had to do it. A lot of pressure. I can bend spoons with my mind, but sometimes I have to cheat. But when I do it and you don't catch me, it's real.
And I don't know how Gardner was reconciling. I mean, he still believed that Mumler was photographing actual spirits.
Yeah.
But... he was trying to fool him with his second photo. Maybe it was something like when no spirit shows up, he somehow fakes it. I don't know. But so he writes a letter to the Banner of Light saying exactly what, you know, that he believed he was doing it, but for some reason he faked my second photo kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And it turns out other people were reporting the same kinds of things, probably to the Banner of Light and probably also the whatever of progress.
Specifically about Banner of Progress, I think. Banner of Progress? Banner of Light?
No, Banner of Light. I don't want to scroll back because then I'll lose my place. But so other people were reporting that they thought Mumler was faking it.
Were other photographers starting to horn in on his business? I would think that would be, you'd have to know the technique. You'd have to figure out double exposure.
They will eventually. I don't know if they were this early. Because this is still pretty early into it. This is like just a year or two. So some people were saying that the spirits in their photos were just people who had sat for photos in Mumler's studio before. Some people were actually accusing him of breaking into their homes and stealing photos of their loved ones so that he could somehow put them into other people's photos.
I doubt he broke into any homes, but I'll bet you he had other means of acquiring photos from different photographers, from family members, things like that. So again, he could maximize the number of people he's putting in there and pretending and get as many, you know, right? You know, I need someone in the 30s and they had brown hair and whatever, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. I don't know.
And they wore a corduroy jacket with a cravat and a vest or something like that.
Well, so things started to get a little bit hot and uncomfortable there in Boston. So he decides it's probably a good time to take my show on the road. Yep. So he and Hannah moved to New York City in 1868. So this is quite a few years later.
Yeah.
And he started working at a studio, and after about 5 months, he had taken more than 500 spirit photos, made a good chunk of change, and he ended up buying out the studio from the owner. But literally, so that was after about 5 months of doing the business, literally like within 3 days of buying the business, he gets a knock on the door, and the mayor of New York City had sent someone to visit Mumler's studio, pretending to be a customer. And of course, during this visit, Mumler takes a photo that, of course, has a spirit in it and identified it as this is your father-in-law. I'm sure because the guy came in and said, I want a picture with my father-in-law.
He wore a cravat.
But of course, this guy's father-in-law was still alive the spirit in the photo didn't look like him at all. And so
the mayor is doing this. The mayor of New York City is coming to this guy. Really?
Well, he sent somebody to do it.
Oh,
he didn't come himself.
The mayor went. Okay.
No, the mayor sent somebody to pretend to be a customer.
Got it.
Yeah. So I don't know how the mayor found out about him or whatever, but maybe he read the Banner of Light.
Maybe he did.
But
he was disgusted with that kind of cheating his citizens of New York. Was this the last honest mayor of New York City?
Well, Mumler was arrested and charged with fraud. So the city of New York hires this very well-known, well-respected lawyer to prosecute the case. And this is before it actually goes to trial. They do like the preliminary hearing with the judge and to hear all the evidence, whatever, right? To decide if it can move on. And I think this judge was deciding whether or not to present the case to a grand jury.
Okay.
And so this very well-respected lawyer who's working for the city of New York brings some expert witnesses. Mm-hmm. One expert witness, his name is Abraham Bogardus.
Oh, I love that name.
It's a great name.
We get great names on this show.
He is brought in, he's a photographer, and he knows a lot about different techniques and all that kind of stuff. So he's basically brought in to testify about the ways that Mumler could have created hoax spirit photographs. And he, in fact, produces his own fake spirit photograph and explains how he did it, which is basically a double exposure.
So by this time now, we're late 1860s, was double exposure now commonly known among photographers, I wonder. Seems like it would be.
You know, I don't know that. Well, among photographers, maybe.
Yeah
probably. Yeah. But
it's been around since Mumler started in 1861, and he's done a ton of them. You think someone figured it out? They knew, okay, how would you do that? Okay, and it seems like a photographer would be able to figure that out other than Black, the other photographer, because he's not as smart as he thought he was.
So it sounds like he did like a double exposure on one plate or whatever. The other way would be taking two plates, basically sandwiching together and then processing the print from there.
Given how he tricked Black, that sounds like that's how Mumler did it.
Yeah. So then another witness that they brought in for the city of New York was P.T. Barnum.
No.
Interesting.
Like, I know a thing or two about fraud.
Exactly. As an expert on deceit.
I love it.
He explained, you know, when he gets up on the stand and, you know, what are you doing here? He explained that he had, quote, devoted a portion of his life to the detection of humbugs. So I guess humbug.
From a champion humbugger.
Yes. Humbug was his word for, you know, people faking things.
Humbug was the word
things.
For hoaxes and fakes.
Oh, okay.
Humbuggery and things like that. Now, that lasted into the 20th century. I think Houdini used that word, I believe.
Oh, I thought maybe that was P.T. Barnum's own.
He may have invented it. I don't know. But
yeah.
It became, you know, a slang term that lasted a while.
Well, he actually had written a book called Humbugs of the World.
I love it. P.T. Barnum did?
Yeah.
I need to get that.
Yeah. And
starring himself? I'm confused.
Well,
it is amazing that P.T. Barnum was.
I know.
I mean, the Fiji Mermaid. That guy did a lot of fake things. The fake giant.
Yeah. Well, he was questioned about that. You know, like, why should we believe you?
Yeah.
You did this yourself. And he said, you know, like, no, the whole Fiji Mermaid thing. He never, when he was showing displaying the Fiji Mermaid for paying customers, he said he didn't know it was fake. He believed it was real.
He's a liar.
Yeah.
You can look at it and know it's fake.
Yeah. So he said that he had heard about Mumler, and he actually wrote to Mumler and told him, I know you're a fake and I'm going to expose you.
Unless you give me $500.
And he didn't talk about any extortion or blackmail, but he actually bought some of Mumler's photos for his own museum and wrote about him in his book, Humbugs of the World. Mm-hmm. He didn't name him though.
Oh,
he just
really?
Called him the photographer, probably because he didn't want to be sued or something. But he called spirit photos delusions daily practiced upon the ignorant and superstitious.
So by this time, that implies that it's Mumler is not by any means the only person doing this.
I'm sure he wasn't.
Common.
Yeah. He believed that Mumler was taking advantage of grieving people.
For sure.
Obviously he was.
Just like the Long Island medium who does her little nonsense with people who have lost someone.
So the photo that Bogardus had used to show that he could fake a spirit photograph as well as Mumler was actually a photo of P.T. Barnum with the spirit of Abraham Lincoln floating to the right of his head. And the prosecution couldn't figure out exactly how Mumler was making his spirit photos. They had Bogardus's theories and they knew that Bogardus could do it, but they didn't have actual proof about how Mumler was doing it. Which
couldn't Bogardus just say, here's how I did my double exposure.
And that's what he did.
I took a picture of P.T. on that plate.
I know.
Voila. I don't understand.
Yeah, it seems like that's the whole thing. Like, you need to have the motive in order to convict somebody.
You don't.
You just, you don't need to know exactly how he did it. You just need to know that it's possible and it's fake. But so anyway, after this trial, the judge dismissed the charges against Mumler because he said they hadn't been sufficiently proven. He also said he was personally convinced that Mumler was committing fraud, but unfortunately the prosecution failed to prove their case, which sounds a little weird to me. So Mumler supporters counted it as a win because the charges were dismissed. The people who were against Mumler counted it as a win because
The judge
had basically said, he's a fake, we just can't prove it, kind of thing.
It's like when someone commits a crime and the DA just doesn't bring charges because DAs are, we know, cowards about that. And they say, I'm exonerated because they decided not to indict me. You're not exonerated.
Well, and it's funny because most of the articles that I read literally said he was acquitted. He wasn't acquitted. It never actually went to trial. The judge just said, I can't send this case to the grand jury.
It's insufficient.
Yeah, because of insufficient evidence.
That's not it. Still to this day, it bugs the shit out of me when they say they've been exonerated.
Yeah.
Pete Hegseth walks around saying he's been exonerated. You paid the woman who you molested and assaulted to NDA and to drop charges. And he literally says, I've been exonerated.
Yep.
It couldn't be less true. So,
Well, this still wasn't great for his business. And his studio just wasn't getting...
He needs to go out west where people will just be, oh my God, I ain't never heard of photography. I don't know why I gave him
that. He doesn't go out west. And actually, the New York photography community basically comes out publicly and denounces him. Like, you're not welcome in the photography community.
He's making him look bad.
Yes. So he moves back to Boston. He and Hannah move back to Boston. Mm-hmm. And he restarts his studio there in Hannah's mother's house. Business still wasn't real great. He was getting a lot fewer clients. Then in 1870, he gets a booking for a woman named Mrs. Lindahl. She wants a portrait of herself with her dead husband, who had died several years earlier. And when she shows up, it turns out to be none other than Mary Todd Lincoln.
Why is she calling herself Lindahl?
I don't know. I don't know. She has to be incognito, maybe.
You know, that's actually not, of course, she was famously a spiritualist, and not just from her husband before that, with her dead son.
Yeah.
And she, that seems like the way to go for him, is just focus on the true believers. You know, don't try to get too big. Don't try to get too out front. Don't try to do too public. Just really, you know, focus on the folks who believe in it. And they're going to eat it up.
Yeah.
I'm assuming she did.
She did. Yeah. And of course she sits, she, you know, goes to her sitting, and she sure enough gets a picture of herself sitting in a chair. She's kind of looking straight at the camera. And then kind of behind her is Abraham Lincoln with his hands on her shoulders, looking down at her lovingly.
I think Lincoln did a lot of basically spiritualist photobombing, because a lot of these things had Lincoln, because he was probably the most famous dead person in the world by that time.
Yes. And this photo was reproduced a lot, and it became a very popular souvenir. A lot of people got a copy of it.
I think I've seen it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's online. You can see it. So I think his business kind of just peters out. Mm-hmm. He writes an autobiography in 1875, never admitting to any kind of fraud. He still is claiming what he was doing was legitimate. A few years after he writes his autobiography, he and Hannah gets a divorce, and he never takes another photograph after that.
Interesting. What year?
He wrote it in 1875.
And then he got divorced when?
A few years after that.
Okay, well, he's getting up there now, because he's born in 1822. Oh, no, wait.
1822. He's in his 50s.
Or 60-ish.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Late 50s. Okay.
Yeah. He died in 1894. Mm. But so he was considered the first spirit photographer, but he wasn't the last. People kept at it, kept doing it. And his techniques were built on by others in the later 1800s, because spiritualism and spirit photography was still very popular. People were still accusing them of being frauds. There was an English priest and medium. His name was William Stainton Moses. He was an early investigator of spirit images. Yeah. And there was something called the Ghost Club, which sounds super cool. It was founded in 1862. It's believed to be the oldest paranormal investigation and research group in the world. So the chairman of this group, his name's Alan Murdy, he said by 1875 he had examined over 600 alleged spirit photographs. And he thought maybe there was about a dozen that would pass as something actually supernatural. He said that he could tell, you know, that they were fakes. And he said that there were people out there who would recognize a sheet and a broom as their dear departed. So a lot of it is wishful thinking or seeing what you want to see. And, you know, I paid a lot for this picture, so it's my, you know, dead grandma or whatever. And by World War I, like you talked about, spiritualism and spirit photography had gained notable supporters like Arthur Conan Doyle. And same thing as in the Civil War, the loss of your loved ones. And, you know, people wanted to be reunited with the dearly departed. So in England, there was another spirit photographer named William Hope. And he already had an established spirit photography business. And lots of people were claiming he was a fraud. He was investigated by none other than
Harry Houdini.
Harry Price.
Oh, Harry Price. Mm-hmm. So this must be, so this is what, 1930s, 20s?
1922 is when he's, because it's it's post-World War One.
Okay.
And so Price conducted an investigation that exposed William Hope as a fraudster for doing the whole double exposure thing.
Was what the second time he was exposed, though? So that was his double exposure.
So it's for double exposing two glass plates at the same time.
Yeah.
So that's not really a double exposure.
Yeah, it is.
No, when you're exposing, I mean,
it's a form of it,
if
right?
If it's two plates,
yeah.
I guess exposing it yeah. on the photograph or whatever. Yeah.
Sure. Why not?
Yeah. So, yeah, it said one featuring a ghostly, you know, somebody's supposed to be the ghost, yeah. and then the second to be the client,
okay.
essentially.
And they just kind of maneuver it. So, you know, it's hovering. I've seen a lot of them. Sometimes yes. they seem like, well, they're a little bit off the ground. And because yeah. it's hard to do. It's like, but
to match ghosts, up.
So that's perfect. They can yeah. hover. They yep. they weren't always matched up as if they're standing on the same plane. They looked weird. They just sometimes they're hovering kind of up near the ceiling even.
Yeah.
And doesn't matter. They're a ghost.
Exactly. So even though he was essentially exposed by Harry Price said, I know how he did it. He still had supporters who believed what he yeah. was doing was real.
It's a good example of something where, I mean, we have all kinds of things like that today. Conspiracy theories are disproved and debunked. It doesn't matter. The true believers, no matter how ludicrous mm-hmm. they are. By this point, it's so obvious. Everybody knows what double exposures are. You know it's easy to do.
Yeah.
It's a common photographic trick. There's no reason to believe any of this
yeah,
thing.
But
people who want to believe it are going to believe
it. Yeah, spiritualists who really wanted yeah. that picture of their loved one, they're yep. going to believe it. Regardless.
I mean, you could see, ghost photography could be something different. It's like, that's not a spirit. I'm not calling that spirit. I caught a ghost on camera. That's a little bit of a different
yes.
thing.
And that goes on to today.
Oh, for sure.
Like, yeah. the, you know, all of the, and people believe it, even yeah. today in the, with, Photoshop and yeah. digital photography, we know how yeah. it's done and how easily it can yeah. be done and
Which
look
is,
good. Like all of that Slenderman nonsense.
Yes.
And, you know.
It's kind of sad, though, because what if someone really does take a legit picture of an actual ghost? There's no, you know,
yeah.
there's really no reason to believe it. It's
no.
going to be very difficult to prove it
yeah.
to discerning to people who aren't and wanting to believe
it. And there used to be like photography experts who
yeah.
could examine a negative or examine a
yes.
photo and tell you if it had been manipulated.
I think that's going to get harder and harder.
Especially, yeah, with digital photography,
yeah.
I think it is going to get harder.
There are ways, I guess, but I think that's going to get very increasingly difficult
yeah.
to figure out, to discern clear manipulation. So
yeah, I don't think there's any market for spirit photography these days.
No.
But I mean, there's all those photos of like the orbs and...
Yes.
And there's just so many weird things that happen in the process of
yeah.
taking a photo that causes a lot of these distortions
yes.
and stuff like that.
And video too. All these little flicks of light that those little,
yeah.
those little creatures, supposedly those yep. little tiny fast flying. What are they called again? We did an episode on it. I can't remember their name right now.
Yeah, I don't
the little
either.
Little winged, not yeah. the word, winged, that were flicking around certain video under certain conditions.
Yep.
I mean, those were just an artifact of an uncommon artifact of.
Yeah,
light conditions and things like that at the time. And they, I think, if I remember correctly, there were moths and little tiny gnats and things
yeah.
like that flying around. But
yeah.
they looked weird.
Yeah.
And in that case, that's interesting because that's actually real. It's not a fake.
Right.
It's just not what you think it is.
Yes. Yeah. And why we think little yeah. flickers of light well, or...
Right.
or
why should a ghost look a little light? I want to see a person.
Or a ball of light is... Yeah. Well, there are... a lot of people who still believe in ghosts and
yes.
supernatural things, and they
sure.
just want to believe in those things. In fact,
I believe in ghosts.
A survey from 2021, 36% of people from, this is the United States specifically, said they believed in ghosts.
36? I'm
yeah.
surprised it's not higher.
Yeah. Women are more likely to believe in ghosts, and men are more likely to believe in UFOs.
That actually kind of makes sense.
Yeah. So... I don't know.
So spirit photography doesn't really, I mean, it did kind of wane really 20s and 30s, right? It just kind of sort of
I think so,
wore
yeah.
down in kind or in tandem with spirituality kind of winding
yeah.
down.
And yeah.
interesting, the time when spirituality you think would have come back would have been after World War II, but it didn't. It didn't make another comeback after that. Yeah. I'm not sure.
And that just might be technology and people were more.
No, because you still have medium. You have mediums now.
Yeah, that's
right.
True.
Most spirituality. Spiritualism. The word. Let's get Aaron. Most spiritualism is just mediums talking to your loved ones. That's still around.
Yeah.
It just didn't explode after World War II like you did after World War I and after the Civil War and after many wars in Europe too, in the late 19th century. You know, but it didn't.
Know why.
It did later on in the kind of, I don't know, 70s and yeah. Then again, kind of now, it's pretty big now. Mediumship and that kind of stuff. This paranormal is huge right now,
mm-hmm.
as this show. Yeah. But so was there any other sort of famous, was William Hope and Mumbler kind of the two most famous spirit photographers?
I mean, I heard about them and read about them, but I didn't write them down. There's a couple. There's one and I...
Is there anybody doing it now at all? Anybody?
I don't think so.
I mean, huh.
There's one in like some estate in England where some woman, her name is Sybil something, she set like a camera probably on a tripod or whatever and left it, I think, for a few hours, mm-hmm. you know, exposing the whatever, taking the photo for a few hours. And then when she got the picture, supposedly the dead lord of the manor was in it. He had actually just been killed in probably a horse riding accident or whatever.
Let's assume, fox hunting.
And his interment was actually going on while she was exposing this photo.
Interesting.
So I think she was alleging, oh, look, here he is in this photo.
He should be over by his funeral. That's kind of rude. He's ditching his own funeral. That's not.
Other people had theories like it maybe because she was exposing it for so long, a servant walked the room by, and sat down to rest for a few minutes. Yeah. And because, you know, it would have looked like.
Yeah,
it would look blurry and translucent and stuff like that. So,
interesting.
But everybody said no. A man of his station, all of his servants would have been required to attend his funeral. Yeah, so that couldn't have been that.
So it's impossible.
Yeah. So then it must be his ghost.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't realize there are rules, and those have never been ignored. So I guess if you think about it, though, ghost photography is is basically a variation on spirit photography. Spirit photography is very specific, though. Pose for a picture.
Yes.
I'll make sure I'll call your loved one to be in that picture with you. This ghost photography is a little bit different.
Just like, oh, I took this photo and this ghost appeared in it, which
that's different. Even trying like this person. It sounds like this person.
Which that does happen because we've all in the olden days when we had film cameras that you had to manually wind it.
Yep.
We all accidentally didn't wind it and took a picture over a picture.
Or wound it partially.
Yeah.
And there'd be a picture like off to the side would be part of the previous picture and looked very strange. Yeah. I've done that myself.
Yeah.
Back in the olden days, Carrie, as you put it.
Yep.
Well, thank you,
Carrie. There are a few other notable ones, but.
Yeah. I think we need to bring it back.
Sure.
But no one poses for pictures anymore. Can you imagine going to a Kmart and asking for a spirit photograph? Actually, not a bad idea.
Yeah. I mean, do people still take their kids?
I don't believe so.
Sears photos.
Hopefully, it's outlawed. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's a very cruel thing to do to your children.
I stopped doing that. I mean, poor little Emma has never been to a professional photo studio.
So that's really sad.
I know.
Maybe that's why she's so filled with anger. Well, thank you for listening to this episode about spirit photography, a thing that was pretty big back in the day. Not so much today.
That's
fine. Let's cut that out. Okay.
Thanks for listening.
Bye.